Thanks for checking in for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. Today I'm in Marblehead, Ohio with artist Carrie Ferguson. Hey, Carrie. Thanks for taking time out today to talk to us.
Hello. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Where'd you grow up? How long you been in Marblehead?
Well, I'm from the Cleveland area. I spent 40 years there, and I've been in Marblehead approximately 27 years.
Okay. What brought you to Marblehead?
My dad used to take me to Kelly's Island, and I fell in love with it. And then there was a period of maybe 20 years where I never even came out this way. And then I bought a boat and decided to bring it out to the islands. One thing led to another. I bought a cottage. And once I knew I was going to be out here, you know, decided to put up a studio slash gallery. And then proceeded to buy some property and built a house.
So the Marblehead dream, really?
Yes, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I print that on some of my stuff, living the dream. I love this area.
So were you a painter first or a glassblower first?
I've been a glass artist for 50 years. Okay. And didn't start painting till later on in my career. I like using different materials, and I'm not, you know, I'm kind of married to glass and paintings, but I like to run off and, you know, do some other types of materials as well.
Is it a happy marriage?
It is. It's very happy. I love it. I feel very fortunate to have been, you know, creating, you know, my whole life, and I'm starting out in business at the age of 21. And being able to, you know, raise a family and make a living, you know, doing what I love, it's been a fabulous life.
As I look around here, I see dozens of paintings on the wall. Are these oil paintings?
Yes, I primarily work in oil.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't think I am looking at a single one that is not lake, water, or nature related. Is that the case?
Well, you know, I do love this area and the Great Lakes, and I love everything about it, you know, from the shoreline to the islands to the working boats. I mean, I'll go out in my boat and see a tugboat, you know, and next thing I know, I'm, you know, driving over to it and taking pictures and doing a painting of it. The lighthouses, I've been doing the various lighthouses down the shoreline and over on Put-in Bay. I've done that lighthouse and some of the others, Toledo Harbor, and you know, there's literally hundreds of them to do. So yeah, I'm you know, totally love the area.
What I'm looking at now, are these paintings that are simply meant to be beautiful and enjoyed by the people that may own them or view them? Or is there some hidden agenda with your paintings?
There's not really a hidden agenda. I'm all about painting, you know, things that are pleasing to the eye and, you know, tap into somebody's emotion, you know, whether it's, you know, my most popular image is a Cedar Point painting. I call it Sailing Past the Point. And, you know, for those of us that have been there as a kid and when they see it, you know, it taps into that emotion. You know, I'm trying to make people happy, you know, when they see the paintings.
What can you tell me about the work that you do with glass?
Well, my love affair with glass started, you know, in my teens, and my friend had a cottage on Lake Chautauqua, and we used to go there all the time, and he had a beautiful leaded glass window with beveled glass in it, and I just fell in love with that window, and when the sun would hit it, rainbows would be cast onto the floor and things like that, and I remember sitting there one day at the kitchen table, and I said, I'm going to learn how to do that.
Not too long after that, Ferguson tracked down an old man in the Cleveland area who was also a master crystal cutter, eventually taking Carrie under his artistic wing.
And his nickname was Babe Langan. His real name was Walter Langan. He was one of the last few living master glass cutters that did cut glass during, you know, the American Brilliant period of cut glass, which was from about 1880 to 1920. And because he was born in 1892, he just caught the tail end of that brilliant period of cut glass. And that's why when I started working with him, he was one of about six guys in America who did that type of work. So imagine my my enthusiasm when I walked into his studio and saw pieces of glass with hand-cut birds on it and butterflies and different geometric designs. You know, my artistic mind really started racing to the, you know, as to the possibilities of what I could do with all these other techniques. And so eventually he started, you know, opening up to me and knew I wasn't going away. You know, he was 80 and looking for somebody to pass on what had taken him his whole life to learn. And
no kidding.
And I was an eager student and just kept going back, and we became best of friends. And I served an old-fashioned apprenticeship. I didn't get paid. I just kept going and working, and we worked together till he passed away at the age of 90. So I had 10 years of working with him, and we became, you know, best of friends. And
what a stroke of luck.
I look back and think about how fortunate I was to, you know, have been able to work with a master crystal cutter like that. And the experiences he told me about, you know, the stuff he shared with me, you know, to have somebody who worked in those facilities and to get that firsthand knowledge, you know, and experience and hear the stories from him, from somebody who was there. I mean, it was like talking to somebody who was, you know, in France in World War I and you know, stuff like, yeah, a lot of history. And to be hearing it firsthand was, you know, amazing.
What's your relationship with Lake Erie?
My earliest memories, as I said, was going to Kelly's with my dad. He had a business, distribution business, and he found some customers on Kelly's. I remember going there, and at the time you could actually fish off the piers, the ferry docks, and going there and fishing and, you know, catching perch and double headers and everything. And then, you know, going to the campground, and they would be flayed up and cooked, and, you know, just boating, swimming. I mean, we're so fortunate to live on this lake. It's amazing. I mean, I believe we have what people on the East Coast have, and we have big, long beaches. We have islands, lighthouses, you know, lakeside. I mean, there's, you know, it can be anything, you know, anybody wants it to be. And, you know, to be able to take your boat and go to Cedar Point or go to Sandusky and go to a restaurant and drive back to your dock, I mean, it's just a fabulous place.
So are you saying there's something on Lake Erie for everyone?
I think there is, yes.
Back in the mid 20th century up to the late 70s, Lake Erie was just a tremendous mess. How do you feel about the health of Lake Erie now as it stands in 2024?
That's a really good question, and I'm not an expert, but I can tell you from my own experience, when I was a kid, as I mentioned, I liked to fish, and I lived in Cleveland, and one of my earliest memories was the pier. We used to fish by 55th, and there was a big pier, and there on the side of that pier was a big painting with the words that said, "Help me, I'm dying." And I'll never forget that.
No kidding.
That's etched into my head.
That was in the 60s, 70s?
Probably 70s.
Okay.
I would have been old enough to drive there.
Okay.
So yeah, that would have been in the 70s. And then of course we had a couple fires on the Cuyahoga River. You know, definitely a national embarrassment. Since that time, you know, we've had, you know, a lot of EPA and, you know, cleaning up the lake. I've seen a huge difference. Zebra mussels came along, and there was a huge scare about the zebra mussels. And And again, in my humble opinion, it seems to me that, you know, they've helped to actually clean the water up a bit.
Right. I've heard that.
Overall, I think it's on a good path. I think it is getting cleaner.
Carrie, is there one topic on Lake Erie that concerns you about its future?
What I see coming, you know, I think everything in life has positives and negatives. I've been coming here for, you know, many years, and it was kind of this beautiful, sleepy, cool place that not everybody, you know, knew about. I think this area is going to explode, if I can use a word like that, because I think the popularity of what many of us have known for many years is really getting out there, and I see more people, you know, I kind of have my fingers on the pulse a little bit because I talk to people all the time in the gallery and, you know, where are you from? And, you know, they tell me, oh, we just bought a place out here and we're looking to retire out here. And I'm seeing more and more of that. I'm seeing, you know, on Catawba, we got some beautiful restaurants over there. You know, I think I mentioned to you that we're putting one in right next to the gallery. It's going to be called the Beach Glass Lounge. And so that's my concern. I feel that we are in a transition phase, and I think I really think this place is going to just keep getting more and more popular faster than it has in the past.
Are you saying it's going to get ruined?
I don't. Again, I mentioned the positives and negatives of everything. So it's a tough place for a lot of people to live because there's really not a lot of jobs. Basically, most of it is tourism, but as more and more people live out here full time, and we see these developments going in with houses, and there's going to be more demand for, you know, more businesses.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positive aspects to it. You know, the downside is summer, you know, the traffic and going out to eat and waiting, you know, 2 hours at a restaurant to get a seat and things like that, you know. But, you know, it's part of, you know, it's the way of life around here, and you get used to it and you deal with it. But there's people that live here. They there's parts of the off season that we love. And then there's, you know, parts of the busy season that, you know, we love. And there's, you know, parts of it we don't like so much.
Hey, Carrie, thank you so much for meeting with us today for the Lake Effect Podcast.
Thank you, and I was thrilled to be a part of your podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me today for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. I'm your host and producer, James Proffitt. Executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you have questions or want to learn more about Lake Effect, visit wgte.org/lakeeffect. Until then, I'll see you somewhere around the lake.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.